Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Retronauts Micro. I'm your host, Bob Mackey, and if you're new to our show or new to Retronauts Micros, these are smaller episodes that we do on the off weeks that cover subjects that couldn't necessarily fill a 90-minute episode, especially this one today. Today, we'll be talking about GamePro TV. If you couldn't hear the stifled laughter in the stifled laughter in the background, I'm hardly keeping it together. We were talking about Eddie Deason earlier. We are here at the Laser Time bedroom studio. Who is here with me? Let's start over here.
Henry Gilbert, hi.
Who else is here?
Hey now, Christopher Antista.
And?
Former GamePro editor, Dave.
Ooh. And he knows the secret hiding place of Bernan, yeah. I'm guessing. So yeah, like today I did want to talk about, I feel like our Nick Arcade episode was such a success. I had a lot of fun talking about Nick Arcade, doing research. And believe it or not, today's subject is even more lost to history. I could barely find an episode guide online. In fact, it took Dave's secret contact for me to know how many episodes of the show were actually produced because everywhere I went, Wikipedia, IMDb, every date was wrong, every listing was wrong. Like, no one cared about the show. And of course, it's GamePro TV. It was aired from 1991 to 1992, one season, 14 episodes, and it was essentially, literally, a TV version of the magazine in the most literal interpretation
Very
you can
sincere.
Think of. Yes.
Yeah. Like, the same, because I was watching it with Dave, I'm like, that's just a section of the magazine.
Yep.
Like
SWAT Pro reviews, all that stuff.
And in terms of, branding, if we want to call it that, it is very on-brand. It's like,
fonts.
Exactly, the same fonts, the same colors, the same, disgusting 90s art that I kind of love. If I ever have another room, I will make it look like the GamePro TV set. Sorry, I'm stammering because I'm just, imagining, living in a world of pipes and smoke and blocks.
Yeah, and if you look at the two hosts side by side, they're literally the 1 and the 5 on the GamePro scale.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I never
So you're saying J.D. Roth needs to liven it up a bit.
J.D. Roth Slam, who you might remember from what? Funhouse, Finders Keepers?
Funhouse.
And the white kid on Captain Planet.
And now he hosts...
Oh, he really played Wheeler?
He was Wheeler.
Yeah. Okay. He's an executive producer on a lot of reality shows nowadays.
Is he really?
I did, Kid Survivor. It was called Moolah Beach.
I did look that up. Apparently, for the past 6 years, he's been executive producer on My Cat from Hell. And his entire adult life, if you look at all of his reality shows he's produced, they look like parodies of reality shows The Simpsons would make. They all have the insane names. This could not possibly have been a show, but it's 30 episodes, J.D. Roth, EP.
I got the feeling...
I have affection for this guy.
Yeah.
I had it, but I got the feeling from just watching it that, I think him and his co-hosts were not friends.
Are they fake gamer guys?
Lab Gizmotech here. We're going to see what they have for us today, okay, bud?
All right. What do we got that's chilling and hot today? Give it to me. Yes. Oh, baby, you know what this is? You want to hold on to it for me?
Sure, dude.
Psych! Ha, this is the Ace More Game Action Replayer.
Wow.
Yeah, it's basically a device that gives emulation style tricks to your console.
Save states by plugging in a go-between.
Nintendo would consider that illegal, probably. Yep. They would hate you and you would void your warranty.
J.D. Roth said it was chill and hot.
But I just love that that's the beginning of the episode. They threw it out there and we were like, paid placement and no, they're saving it for the last segment.
Yeah.
This is a tease.
Get ready for this.
I guess it could be both, that it's
I think I ran into the same conclusion I did with Nick Arcade in that unlike magazines, editorial outlets, and websites, they actually had to get permission for what they showed, and it looks like a lot of people said no. Because the games discuss are garbage.
But GamePro TV sold it in a different way, apparently, according to Dave's secret contact. Can we say his name, Dave?
Yeah, his name is Michael Myers. The Michael Myers you're thinking of. And not the other Michael Myers you're thinking
not
of.
Not the murderer or the actor who could be a murderer.
So
we don't know.
He was an editor at GamePro way, way back when. I don't know what
he's
his name was.
He's in the credits.
Yeah. Yeah. And now he does PR. He's he does PR for an organization named after Michael Myers PR. Mm-hmm. They represent 1C and a bunch of other developers.
Yeah.
And I just reached out to him because I saw his name in the credits, and I knew a bunch of old GamePro editors, and I knew of his PR, so I hit him up, and he sent us an email. Maybe we can read it more later.
But you're an editor, and you didn't work with many or any people involved with this, right?
Well,
I guess it would have been 20 years later.
Yeah, because this was 1990, 91.
That Game Informer dynasty of people who've never left.
The most senior editors there were probably 92, 93, 94. But and this was just right before their time. But I was able to reach out to this one guy, and they did interface with these guys and tried to add some legitimacy.
It seems like if you were to build a bad game show right now, while doing your best, this is the best you could have done.
Yeah, it's way better than Nick Arcade, Chris. It actually shows the games. But we are burying the lead here, and that lead is Bernan, rather, the co-lead, who I was ready to hate until I did some research on him, because as a kid, this character embarrassed me, and he is playing a character. He's very much a Wayne and Garth, Bill and Ted, more of a Ted.
He reminded me of Cody from Step by Step.
Yeah, although I think he might have predated Cody, but again, he's got the surfer lingo. He's got this weird, like, I just stuck my hands in a doorway posture. What is that posture?
He's a Pauly Shore posture.
I guess. Yeah. Is he, what's that called? Chilling with the Weeds?
Yes.
It's like Kramer Origins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his hair is like that, and you can tell he'd come over to my place, play some John Madden football. And like this is what makes this clip Shakespearean, in that this is a real review. Buried under a bro stereotype.
Yeah. He actually lowers the broness for the spoken narration. But when he's playing the character, he's like, whoa, dude, that was totally awesome.
And I'm like, no, there's real information buried in here. Like I'm guessing Madden wouldn't have wanted
this
you to hear.
This game, because it is truly my all-time favorite sports cart. I played this game over and over and over, and I'm still heavily into it. I'm talking about the all-time great John Madden football. Yeah! Touchdown! Dude, it's coming out on the Super Nintendo, and it is better than ever.
So I thought, like, this is going to be hysterical, embarrassing. And then it's just like, no, that's how you would have reviewed the Super Nintendo version of a Genesis game. They can show more people on the field. A little bit of slowdowns now gone. And finally, you can play with more than 17 teams. I'm like, that all checks out. That's a real review.
It is like a review.
How did you do that?
It's a review from an excited teenager. And I think you're right, Chris, whoever said it, that I can sense some animosity between J.D. Roth and this guy. Because this guy is a trained actor. He went on to produce and direct his own independent films. He trained under Jeff Goldblum and other famous actors. So I can see this guy just being really method on the set. Like, oh, God, he's in his Bernan character again, guys. Just heads up, okay?
Brian and I saw your review.
I can totally see there being...
Just stop and think of your show.
I can definitely see a difference between the two of them. Just like, if he's being super method, or at least he's like, I'm a professional actor, and the other is a child actor or a former child actor, that's two very different schools of actoring, I would say.
Yeah, and J.D. Roth has this really aw shucks, like, Disney Channel presenter, like, hey guys, we're going to talk about some fun games today.
I'm squeaky clean, but I got an inimitable voice coming up next on Finder's Keeper.
He is
he is the universal suburban white every teen that we all wanted to be. Like, he represented the like, uber gamer, I guess, at the time.
He's like a nice version of Budnick, I'd say. Yeah, from Salute Your Shorts, in case this...
because he has the devil's red hair.
But I will say, Bernan keeps referring to the viewers as Bud, like, come on, Bud, check it out. But he also calls the audience dudes and dudettes. So he's extending the olive branch to women on this very manly show.
I don't think a woman appears on
No. They can only afford two actors.
Only in like a sizzle on the Immortals.
I can tell his fallback anytime he doesn't know exactly what to say is just, yeah.
Not I, but check it out. The SNES version has made major improvements in the defensive game. The defense is not only smarter, but the computer's defensive back pass coverage is the real raw deal.
This is a real boring Madden review.
It is.
It's incredible.
I feel like you could hear a very similar review to this now for a Madden game.
Yes, they're talking about the difference between last year's iterative version.
And saying the same stuff of like, this problem from last year finally got fixed. They added this new thing, and I really like it.
This is really cool because, see, this was a problem on the Genesis game because you'd be right on the receiver, and somehow he'd manage to catch a pass when he had no chance, and that was completely bogus.
And I think that's the real boring nature of it. This is an upfront, earnest game review, but if it's television. And, like, even as a kid, like, fuck Madden, I'm out.
Yeah. Well,
like,
I mean, Madden's the best part of the episode.
Yeah, it is.
Only part that's not repeating itself.
Yeah,
so kids can write everything.
You're right, Dave. I swear, 60% of this episode is them reading letters or numbers and then repeating them. Just hit A up, C4, and then down. Get a piece of paper.
If I don't have Shadowgate right now, and you're saying this twice, like, this, why wouldn't I leave?
I can't remember this.
We are living in a 3-channel world, I do remember this was like the quintessential 3 o'clock syndicated thing.
It was for me. It was a Saturday morning thing.
Yeah. Same here, Dave.
And I was just like, I'm too tired to write this down. I'll just have to remember it.
I felt like it for me. It was like a 6 a.m. show.
I mean, it was
like,
the earliest thing on Saturday.
Yeah, it was the syndicated stuff that would happen before the network Saturday morning stuff. And I get that it felt so long how they had to repeat every code. But when you think about a world where you can't pause or rewind every single thing. Kids do need 2 chances to write it down.
Yeah.
This is J.D. Roth I love how he's inserted blue screen style into every game.
I did like that. I thought it was
for the Genesis system, Game Ground, that'll give you total level selection capability. All right, listen up. First, bring up the option screen. Now make sure that the arrow is pointing at level and press these buttons in the following order. AC, BC. If you did it right, round select will now pop up below sound test.
There is actually
the Batman part. There is a tip on how to unlock the music sound test in Batman for Game Boy. We're going to show you once and show you again. And at the end of this, you'll see us unlock sounds.
I prefer to hear it zero times.
And this does, again, it reeks of that Nick Arcade thing. Like, Nintendo was not cooperating. Japan was largely not cooperating. The Immortals? What the hell is the Immortals?
It's the Immortal. It's a notoriously difficult, isometric game.
Yeah, for Genesis?
Really convoluted puzzles, impossible combat. There's great Let's Plays of it.
It's brought up three times.
Yeah.
That was a Genesis port. It was a PC.
Exactly. Yeah, it looks like a PC game.
But it looked hideous, like just boring even for its time. Though that's why, as a kid, at least this episode, the second episode of the show, would have annoyed me because even then I was a total weeb who loved colorful Japanese games. And other than the licensed game in this, it's all brown garbage.
Yep. Yeah, like, I should say
we did garbage.
For this one, we did watch what's called on YouTube Episode 2 Sup Edition, because there's no official episode production numbers I could find. But there's a second review in this that I want to bring up about Bucky O'Hare.
Oh, yeah.
And I find this gave me more respect for Bernan, because he gave a real review and then J.D. Roth completely undercut everything he said. Because Bernan's like, it's got great graphics, all these characters, bro, all these great levels. Yeah. And then J.D. Roth's like, graphics get a 3. Sound, a 3. Gameplay, a 3. Fun factor, 3. All in all, a great game. It's like, no, 3 is not good on the GamePro scale.
Yeah, I don't know if Bernan actually, did he put scores on his?
I don't know.
No, the Batman didn't have
a score. So
this was an early debate between scored reviews and non-scored reviews.
Oh, yeah.
But I just remember. I literally remember.
Because his section was called 16-bit hits.
That's right.
He's talking about the differences between the Super Nintendo and Genesis version of John.
So this is more of an editorial. But
I think so.
I vividly remember actually watching this as a kid and wanting to get Bucky O'Hare so bad, because just that that one scene where Bucky he's in the ice level and he changes it into another one of the Bucky O'Hare characters. I'm like, that is the coolest thing. I always wanted to change characters in the middle of a level in
a
game.
It looks a lot like Tiny Toons.
I thought that now, Dave. I was like, I want to play this. I haven't played this yet.
And I totally forgot that right afterwards it gets threes across the board. I think that's
the sound effects are okay, but nothing really special. Since this card is aimed at the younger game players, it's no real surprise it's going to be an easy play for the more seasoned game pros like us. I gotta say, though, I checked out the giant mechanical snake maze on the blue planet and the flowing lava on the red planet, and dude, I don't care how hot you are, you better power up, because these situations will put you through some serious moves.
That's right. That's right, Bernan. I scored your review. Go to hell. You're going to be off this show in 6 episodes.
Time they're spinning threes, and you can see the result the whole time. Yeah. We know what's going to happen now, and then when the dust settles on our generation, we're all dead. The only reason GamePro will be remembered is its 5 score system.
What if Scary Larry and Bubonic the Bullfrog?
It's just that, Bubonic.
Sorry.
You know how they used to, do they do that somewhere? Print magazine ads with review quotes and scores. Mm-hmm. On the page. Does that still happen? Mm. Right into us at Retronauts.com.
PC Gamer?
I wrote for that. I should know.
Wait, was Mike Myers Major Mike?
No.
Okay.
But that the number, seeing the number 5 guy as someone's quoted review in an ad for a video game, GamePro gave it a...
I feel bad I never gave out a 5 at GamePro.
Not even for sound or challenge?
No, but by the time I got there, it was just one score that was... It was still on the 5-point scale, but...
Did you notice on the thing they didn't show the one and they didn't explain what the one was?
If it's that bad, it wouldn't make for
having
good TV.
Having worked review and advertorial, one games don't get published.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I am aware of that. But all the rest of the games that were just so bad, especially the 16-bit hits
game
thing.
Ground. That's in the Sonic Genesis collection, isn't it?
I think so. I think it's one of the earliest RTSs, actually.
But the 16-bit hits just reminded me of just yeah, this is 92, and predominantly you're talking about NES games. Why are you not talking about the current system?
And not just... The only NES game they brought up was Shadowgate and the Rocketeer.
Yeah.
Only
yeah.
the bona fide classics.
Yeah, Rocketeer had the best green screen where J.D. Roth is sitting in a in an airplane. It's so adorable.
I liked when he was actually in the skull, in the mouth of the skull on the Immortal, like peeking out like, this guy's got bad breath, everybody.
In Rocketeer, each chapter is a different level. For direct entry into level 5,
see, at this point, I'm like, shut up, J.D. Roth. I want to hear the Rocketeer music. It sounds pretty good.
I think it's by the same guys who did the Maniac Mansion music, actually. It sounds like.
That was J.D. Roth reading a code. It's like, I've never been so thankful for the internet.
Yeah. Think about how old that makes us. We had to like listen to a man read us codes. It's so, like, is this the war? What's
happening? I would have to go to school to hear a rumor that J.D. Roth might read a code on a show that might air at some point that day. It, like, how? When am I going to get this
and
code?
And hopefully talk about a game I own.
Hopefully it'll be the Rocketeer, which is hard as balls.
It's pretty hard, yeah.
And, well, my favorite green screen trick of his was the Battletoads one. I loved his Battletoads swinging thing. That was some nice action.
I was impressed
by the low tech they used, but I did want to talk about the hilarious user videos user submitted. I guess viewer submitted videos where they're so awkward. I assume ISIS is going to come out and decapitate one of these kids because it's just like they're like just standing straight, staring at the camera, like reading something like unconvincingly. Oh, yeah. It's just so like, what's going to happen next?
Oh my god, that's right. So many mullets.
There was it was weird. Like one kid sent in a question. I don't know if it's this guy or the other one, but like literally asking them, how do I do this game, bro? Like,
oh, and they were like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, no, they said it took our game guys a real hard time up to airing how to do this, but we've got the answer, and it's. And then they cut
if you're a kid whose parents are rich enough to afford a video camera in 1990 and to be able to send it in and all that, you probably could just afford to call Nintendo and ask.
I would have to imagine, like, if that was the second episode. Unless people were told through the magazine to send that to them, then
I guess everybody got a free T-shirt or a subscription.
Ooh, a free T-shirt.
Like,
that was the only way I could figure out how to incentivize it. I used to fake things for America's Funniest Home Videos, like my boogie board hitting me in the face or falling down the stairs.
The free T-shirt I got one time as a kid was a Doug T-shirt. It was, if you guys remember when the Nicktoons premiered, they had a send in and you'll get one of 100 free T-shirts. And I got a Doug T-shirt and I treasured that original Doug T-shirt.
I sent in my pizza points from Ninja Turtles for a nice Leonardo shirt and some Cheerios. UPC code for a Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure shirt, and I wore it to school proudly that day. And then after that, look at this!
Mamma mia!
Thinks Bill and Ted is awesome!
Oh no!
And then I became known as the fucking Bill and Ted idiot! Woo!
We're gonna bleep one of those words, by the way.
My bad.
You're recounting a situation.
It turned way more horrifying than I could possibly imagine over one of the most innocuous things
ever. That almost became a hate crime, Chris.
The names I got called for wearing a shirt with the poster from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
So I actually looked up one of the people who like submitted their tip. The very first one.
Okay, Dave, I know who you're talking about. Please tell the story.
It's the magic of the internet that, like, the kid's name was, like, this sounds distinctive enough.
Kia Bobzani.
Yeah, so I'm like, you know what? I bet I could find him on the internet with a simple Google search. And I did. And he runs a denim restoration company.
Yeah, he's a jeans magnate, apparently. I did like the second kid with the video. He was very like blue, like, hey, here's a tip for Star Trek for the SNES.
Yeah, I'm like,
throw the refuse over there, and the refuse spot will pick it up.
What a cocky little kid who thinks he knows more about Star Trek the game than me.
Then tell the Klingon, I'm walking over here.
That fucking Star Trek game is so infuriating.
It looked bad.
Make sure at the beginning you pick up a piece of trash. Why? Because you'll need it later.
Because it's an adventure
vital
game,
component.
Yeah.
Well, same with that Shadowland tip that was like, I hope you got a bottle and picked up some rocks with your sling. Then throw the sling at him, then stab him in the chest. You did it.
Like, oh, yeah, that one was extra long, like a wait for him to repeat himself, because you knew that you have to write down the exact instructions.
You have to do it in that order.
Yeah.
Well, did Mike Myers offer any other insight into the
question? Yeah, actually, I have a few quotes from him. Thanks to Dave for reaching out to him.
Problem.
He said, 14 episodes of the show were filmed over a one-week period. That's the entire run of the show.
Yeah.
1 week, 14. This must have been like a shoestring budget operation. Yeah.
Well, I would guess then for both the stars involved, they're just like, this is nothing. Like, I'll do this in a week, and no one will remember this.
It's probably like four 10-hour days.
Yeah.
for them
did,
or something.
Like, did Brennan get fired halfway through, or did he have to like go like?
He's only on like six episodes.
Yeah,
I think.
Maybe he did just like storm off the set one day and be like, "Fuck."
He is that one guy.
It's me or JD, man.
Who no one remembers to Ryan Seacrest.
Ryan Dunkelman.
Dave remembers Ryan Dunkelman.
So Michael Myers goes on to say, we filmed at a TV station in Sacramento, California. We'd spend all day filming a couple episodes, then I get to proof the next day's scripts while eating dinner in my hotel room. So it was just work, and then we have a whole season after a week.
Their P.O. box was in Venice, and I was like, well, I know where the Game Pro office is.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were ever in, like, SoCal.
Well, but back then, like, you make TV in L.A.
Yeah, but they did this in Sacramento.
Not that this is interesting, but I just went to Venice recently this year. It was everything, like, every MTV 90s sting.
Roller skating and Lamborghinis.
I'm not a terrible-looking dude. I look like a mutant on Venice Beach.
I'm sure we all would.
Like, yeah, right outside L.A. on a beach.
Did you go to Hulk Hogan's restaurant?
Wait, it's the spaghetti place?
Oh, no, wait, that's in Florida.
Pastamania?
It's now abandoned. Venice Beach, because that's where he's booked from. Anyway.
Well, so first Hulk Hogan at Pastamania in that Minnesota Mall of America, which lasted like a year. Then he had the Hulkamania Bar and Grill or whatever in Florida, which had famously like racist sign up that was like, hey, if you come in here with baggy pants or whatever, like...
No bandanas by Hulk Hogan.
Wow, really?
Well, it was everything in a dress code that you're like... What would a racist think a black man would wear? And it was just, you can't wear these things in here.
If I can see your crack, I'm sending you black. I mean back, brother!
Let's get off of this.
Yeah, we should get off of this. So we have more quotes from Mike Myers, who might not want to be associated with this episode anymore, but he says, one of the best things about GamePro TV was the leverage that it provided us against our competitors at the time, EGM and Ultra Game Players Magazine, and a few others. GamePro and the other top magazines had each around 300,000 readers, so we were constantly fighting over the best cover story exclusives. When we started talking to game publishers about the opportunity to have their games previewed on a national television show, we were pretty much able to get any exclusive we wanted.
Wow.
So that's how they leverage it. I'm sure Nick Arcade did the same thing. Nintendo was probably like, nope, sorry. Get your own games.
Yeah, always.
We have Nintendo Power. What do we need you for?
I remember I was the biggest fan of Ultra Game Players, which I only
wanted... That was my mag, though.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was the best magazine, which I know I got free by my mother's frequent flyer points that transferred from another magazine to another until it was like, this is the best game magazine there is, and I would eventually go work with those guys.
Yeah, no, me too.
That was such an honor at the time. Until I started to hate the company.
But Ultra Game Players, I'm just remembering it, though, that
Ultra Game Players, if you want to know what that was, the cover of the Super Nintendo Earthworm Jim, I was just looking into it, and it has, like, the Ultra Game Player seal of approval, and I know EGM got that kind of treatment, and GamePro, but rarely Ultra Game Players got the box treatment,
I think people were outraged when, I think, Chrono Cross did not get the Platinum, because one guy gave it a 9 instead of a 10. It's like, God, it's still not that
still
great.
Still not over.
Yep. So let's talk about other things. I do want to talk about, like, okay, so Dave talked about it was the 6 a.m. show, or maybe that was Henry.
Yeah,
that's when it seemed like.
I remember Sunday afternoon.
So this is on TV for all of us, at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it was.
Not at consistent times, though, because I know I tuned in again with like a VCR tape and I couldn't.
I was actually reading GamePro at the time, too. So I think something like it told you when it would air, I guess, maybe like where the issues were sent would have additional information.
We say this on 302010 all the time, but most of my life, most of my Sundays were spent studying the TV guide, trying to figure out when things I like were coming on and whether or not they were new, which it gave you no indication of.
Yeah, for me, it was on, this is the NBC's last year, they actually had cartoons. So the cartoons would be over, then it would be NBA Inside Stuff, and then it would be GamePro TV. Yeah, 91-92 was the last year NBC had any cartoons. Yeah, so
that was the worst. They always had the worst cartoons.
I think it was like Space Cats was the last one.
Yo Yogi
was one of the last ones, too.
And a 3D episode, man. That episode was great. Yo.
But, again, I like this show. I kind of am slightly embarrassed by it now, but it did what it was supposed to do. It wasn't interested in having trivia or any other BS. It was just like, here are the games, show you the games, tell you codes about the games, review the games. It was literal, and that's fine.
It's an admirable effort.
Yeah.
And I can see why it failed, just because, like, I'm not sure you could... Siskel and Ebert at the movies worked because they're talking about new movies, and they're only doing reviews. Now, imagine they were trying to supplement the show with, like, and here's an Easter egg from an old movie that we're going to take 40 minutes to find. That's not Ted Danson's Ghost and Look Who's Talking. Yeah. That's,
well,
I think
Ebert did have the video pick of the week on his show.
Did he?
But that was like the one extra segment
they did. They highlighted new releases instead of like, games had so many other things like, this is my high score. This is how you skip a level.
Oh, yeah.
This is how you beat a boss.
That part where the kids were saying their high scores, like, Where's
on
the
trust,
proof?
On trust.
Where's the proof?
And one was like, I'm heavyweight champion, and Buster Douglas like, what does that even mean? Like, I beat a Piston Honda. What's your point?
Yeah, like, it sounds like he completed the game.
Yeah.
But I think for GamePro TV to actually work on the same level that GamePro Magazine did, it would have to be 4 hours long. Because that was the thing. Like, when I got an issue of GamePro or EGM when I was a kid, first of all, they were, like, thick as hell. Like, novel-sized. You'd get like a 200-page issue, and you would read everything, even the games you didn't have.
Not the first time. No, you would skip to the things.
Just eventually. By the time I was
eventually
done,
I would read the whole thing.
I would read everything. I would read the ads.
I was anal retentive too, Dave. So I just read every even like the masthead. I'm like, ooh, who's editing this
week?
Yeah,
on the first read.
Yes,
I would pour through everything and like, I'm gonna go back and read that. Gonna go back and read that.
Yeah, I was more on Chris's side where I would know what sections I wanted to read, and I would zip around through those, and then I would double back and be like, all right, I still have more time with my brain, and I want to just read. Like, I have to preoccupy my brain, so just read more of this. Though, I think it was in Ultra Game Players, they had an anime review section that turned me on to a lot of anime.
Was that PSM?
Maybe or it's PSM. Yeah.
PolishPope.com. Bill Donahue is selling CDs.
Ooh. I don't know what that means. Oh, it's Bill Donahue. Yeah, the guy. Sorry. So I want to know, I think...
I can never forget it.
It's an Ultra Game Players reference, by the way, if you're wondering. And I do want to know, this show should have lasted, I think. I mean, it did what it was supposed to do, and then when it disappeared, I was like, where did this show go? Because you would never know until the internet came around. I'm like, I wonder what happened to this show? Only one season. Yeah. But again, it would take another decade before video game programming would come back, and the people, I mean, it's no longer really around, but those people are now the most powerful people in the universe in terms of the game industry. Mm-hmm. Like, if you were on cable TV once, you are now the overlord of all video games, which doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I've been attached to major failures, too.
You are the Dorito Pope.
Why am I not the king?
But if you were on cable TV in 2006, you are now the most powerful person.
Yes.
GamePro did come back. Like, there was some kind of half-assed show in, like, 96.
You're right. Actually, it was a paid infomercial for the magazine, Dave. It was on Sci-Fi Channel. Yeah,
I would have watched that.
In the late 90s.
That.
I assume I did watch it, like, after an MST3K rerun or something.
I watched this, and it speaks to the need of an internet we didn't totally know existed yet, and just how much better the internet was for compartmentalizing.
I believe it was ARPANET, Chris.
And there's the,
that was my Al Gore, by
ARPANET,
the way.
Yeah,
it sucked.
1960s. I know all about. You know, the internet has no backbone.
I've got some blueprints to send you.
But more that, like, you're still seeing like a culture war, that dumb little culture war with video games on the side, and it's sort of that, like, video games is just a big giant genre for you can't possibly like all of this stuff.
Yeah, it feels like a real grab bag.
Yeah,
like.
and that's, I don't understand how you would make a movie show. It's like, well, we got to talk about the Kate Hudson movie, the long lost animation from a couple of years ago, Charlie Chaplin and Poseidon. Like, we're gonna do all that in this episode and assume it, the whole that the Venn diagrams will come together and people will be interested. That can't happen
in 22 minutes. Like, how many things can you hit that I will absolutely love? Well, whereas like an issue of GamePro, there's probably a third of that magazine I will like is directly important to me. And then eventually everything will be read.
There's no previews in the show. And that's one of the things I think is really weird.
Well, with the lead time, they can't
I'm guessing they can't do that.
Yeah, they would get unfinished games, Michael Myers told us. Yeah. They would have them 3 to 6 months ahead of time. But still, I don't know what... I mean, the show was probably recorded like in August or July and then ran for like that fall season. So who knows what was in the works then.
Though, I don't know if this was every episode, but in this episode too, it felt weird of like what they're... You know, the important question, what's your demo? But in this case, it was like, so they have Batman and Battletoads. Yeah. They have Bucky O'Hare.
The Immortal Henry.
So that's the difference.
The Immortal twice,
And they have Rocketeer. They have all those, like, these are licensed things that kids will love. But then they have, like, Shadowgate and the Immortals and Game Ground, which are, like, violent, like, for their time, pretty violent games.
Yeah, and like, you can't...
And for grown-ups.
And that's I think, the whole problem. You see video game websites covering other things, and it's just because, like, well, there's no one kind of gamer. And there actually never was.
No.
Yeah.
There never was at all, and you can't service everybody. And I feel so bad watching it. Just like, you know, this is what they had to deal with.
But still, like with Nick Arcade, I watched this just to see what video games looked like.
Yeah,
because it would be another year before I entered the 16-bit era, not until Christmas of 92. So I'm like, oh, a Genesis game. Cool. I can't wait to play this.
And it's been repeating in my head. I don't know if we said it on the last episode, that on just due to production schedules like this in GamePro TV, you saw Nick Arcade on your television. It's 5 hours away from my house. You want to go be on Nick Arcade. And the reality was... they've shot everything, and that's that'll never happen. Like
it was over before
it was over before you knew it existed.
They shoved Fillmore back in the vault.
It might. I think it got two or three more seasons, but that's how most of those shows worked. You'd see them in like. Yeah, you would have to have been a lucky tourist.
Begin
yeah.
the thong of J.D. Roth. So, yes, we do have to record some Talking Simpsons. Thanks yeah. for joining us, everybody, for a slightly silly episode of Retronauts Micro. Hope you don't enjoy our giddiness. I think joking about Eddie Deason so much right before recording time.
Deason, I'm talking about video games, guys.
I was a quintessential nerd in 80s movies. Ah.
See? Yeah, we have skills that cannot be employable at all. So... As always, you can find us on the internet at usgamer.net and retronauts.com, and we have a Patreon. Go to patreon.com/retronauts. Even just a few bucks a month can really help the show. It's completely supported by you guys. We could not do any of this without your money, so please support the show if you can. We've been getting a lot of attention lately, so anything helps, and we want to keep doing this, so please give if you can.
Up Rock's best video, one of eight video
One of ten, and I don't want to say that here because I feel like Michael got screwed. Because Video Game Apocalypse is a great podcast, too.
I'm pretty sure they only heard the one episode that we hosted. That
hosted.
Oh, no, yeah, now we're throwing Dave under the bus. But again, I'm on Twitter as Bob Serbo. I'm out of plugs.
Let's pull out and whip out our Patreons and compare them to one another.
Hey, guys, you got any plugs?
Hey, guys, you got any Patreon plugs? Henry!
I mean, we are supported on patreon.com/lasertime. If you liked this silliness and...
We're so red.
And backwards, so red. And backwards looking... at things like you will enjoy a lot of our podcasts, including Laser Time, but also Talking Simpsons, where we go through every episode of The Simpsons one at a time. Bob Mackey is always on that show. And we also do 30-20-10, where we talk about the events in the year each week. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And
I like to think of it as a little portal into exactly what was happening 30, 20, and 10 years ago. And exactly at that time.
I guess soonish we're talking about the new Super Mario Brothers coming out 10 years ago.
If you guys enjoyed this, maybe we could start talking Game Pro TV. We're already 1/13th done with it.
For one of my favorite things we did on 30-20-10, that I think is just in the very recent past of the show, it was the American reveal. In the 90s segment, the 20 years ago, of Super Mario 64. And I've seen the videos of E3 where Zelda is revealed, Wind Waker is revealed, mm-hmm. and then Twilight Princess. And you can hear gasps in the audience, but like, you'd seen Super Mario 64 in magazines. You knew mm-hmm. it was happening. Space World, I believe it was revealed.
Yeah, from like Space World 95.
And E3 96, when they show it moving to the public, and people lost their fucking mind. And some guy snuck in a camcorder. And you can see people like slapping their heads as Mario moves in a third dimension
before we all got jaded.
In a circle. Yeah. But like just being able to go back to that point and the audio, it's not very good, but like it was one of my favorite things to find that reminded me of this that we didn't know what Mario 64. I didn't know what Mario 64 looked like in motion until it was at a Walmart kiosk.
Yeah, I just saw fuzzy pictures.
Yeah,
and I was like, what the heck?
Like terrible photographs from E3 Space World.
I worked at Capcom. They have all the old boxes there, and you look at the. And we were talking about that with GamePro TV. Like you could how'd they get this footage? I believe somebody said kind of sillily, like maybe Dave or Henry, and like a VCR. But how do you get a screenshot from that footage? Oh. And all the old boxes at Capcom, all of them, are somebody pointing a camera at a television.
You could tell. It has like the warp screen and everything, too.
And that's all the U.S. I'm sure Japan had some other means of doing that. But
they had a magic machine.
Had to deal with. Should I shut up? I'll shut up.
Have we done all our plugs?
Time. We did a show that you guys might like, Retronauties. I don't think is the right word for you guys.
We still need a term for our fans.
I like Retronauties.
Retronauties. Dead Formats. That was
That's
one
a
I
great
did.
Episode.
I did. Did you like it?
I did, yeah. I like the spooky wax, not wax cylinder. But
I thought that was the most terrifying thing
ever. The fake ear voice.
To dig up the oldest recording of a human being that dates back, I believe, to 1860.
Creepy.
Into movies on vinyl and UMDs and the failingest physical media format.
I expect
ever.
To hear that voice right before I die.
Yeah.
Singing Eau Claire de Lune.
Yeah, and that fuzzy, haunting voice from the 19th century.
And I host Cheap Podcast, a pro wrestling podcast. But one more GamePro TV anecdote.
Yeah.
Back when, like, a lot of websites use the Konami code to have certain little jokes here and there, GamePro.com... We had it so if you enter the Konami code, the first episode of GamePro TV like a YouTube embed would just like pop up.
Wow.
So it was a neat little thing that we had for a while.
That's
but
awesome.
Unfortunately, now that the site is dead and
so instead of 30
internet,
lives, it's no lives.
Yeah.
Ah. I hate myself too. Don't worry about it.
Henry, did you have a plug?
H-E-N-E-R-A-Y-G on Twitter. Follow it, baby.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us. And if you're out there, Bernan, we miss you and we want you to come home. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back next week with a brand new full-length episode. Love you. I'm not doing a Bernan intro. Can I start?
Hey, everybody.
Hey, man.
I can't. You have to have, like, the like, what is this? Okay, I'll get into his posture in a second. I have no idea what's happening, but...
Welcome to the Pepsi generation.
We co-opted black culture to the max.
All right, that's going to be, like, a clip that people are going to get mad about. I'll put in after.